All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this glorious Saturday, June 13, 2015. Looking forward to talking with Danielle Mullen this morning, top amateur, LPGA aspiring golfer, and lovely, I should say, a lovely young lady to be around, and infectious smile, and has the game to back it up. So looking forward to talking with her. A little quick shout out to Jimmy Farrell, who won the Long Island Open, the LIGA Long Island Open, in a three-way playoff. Jimmy birdied the last three playoff holes that they played to defeat Mike Versey, and as you all know, PGA Championship, professional championship, Matt Dobbins. And so really what a great win for him, and nice to win on your own home course, the Creek Club. So congratulations to him. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Danielle Mullen, listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm your host, Anthony Scorsia, and with me is Danielle Mullen. How you doing, Danny?
I'm great. How are you?
Thank you for coming into the studio. I really appreciate you coming in and taking the time to be with me. It's always nice to have guests in the studio. I want to start with obviously you have some lofty aspirations. You're thinking about going to Q school, but let's start where it all began, and where did you fall in love with the game?
Before I can even remember, I have a picture that documents it. My dad and I are in ridiculously high visors in our backyard in Amityville, and he's standing with me, well, kneeling, because I was so little. I was holding these little set of clubs, and although my memory doesn't date back that far,
right,
it's obvious he got me into it really, really young. So.
And you did you learn the game at a little place called Sumpwumps or E. Donnelly?
I did. We lived in Amityville, and when I was five, we moved to West Islip, and my parents are not at Southward Ho yet, so mm-hmm. we would go to Sumpwumps Creek, and what better place to learn than a par three
yep.
for a kid?
Yep.
So I would just go around all day, just, play nine, come in, eat, play nine again, come in,
yep.
take a drink of water, go out, play another nine. And it was fantastic.
I think that I play there all the time. I still play there all the time. I miss Joe. He was such a nice guy. But all the guys there are really nice. But I can't think of a better place than a par three course to learn the game of golf. I mean, it's not intimidating. It's not long. I mean, some of the holes are long for when you're young, but you know what I mean. You don't have to stand up and try and hit driver or anything like that. I mean, you may have to hit driver on a par three. I know my kids hit driver on some of the holes, or all of them. But it's not a big ballpark, and so and you're practicing basically the most important parts of the game, which is your short game.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Joe Malloy was a great instructor for short game too. We would go out there, and he would teach me how to chip, and chipping is predominantly the strongest part of my game, so I attribute a lot of that to him.
Yeah, and they have a nice, I would say, a nice collection of holes. It's all a little different, and you got a little, I'm trying to think of number, was it number five, right? That's got the water on the left, mm-hmm. out of bounds on the right, so that's a tight hole. Mm-hmm. Seven is kind of a long, tough hole if you don't hit the ball high, because that's got an elevated green. So, there's a nice, it really tests a lot of parts of your game.
Absolutely. I'll never forget as a kid, 7 and 9, to me, I was thinking to myself, am I ever going to get big enough where I can hit the screen? It's so long.
Yeah, exactly.
As a little kid, I was just hoping and praying that one day I would get strong enough to hit them.
Yeah, that's a difficult hole to the green to hold, because I think a lot of people, you know, someone like you who now can play the play the proper shot to hit that green. And folks, if you're wondering what the hole we're talking about is, it's about from, I don't know, maybe 170 from the back, mm-hmm. maybe a little longer, but it's, you know, it's elevated, it's bunkers on left and right. So you really need a higher ball flight. And sometimes it could be even more challenging because it'll play dead downwind or dead into the wind. And so it becomes, but some people don't have the proper ball flight. And there's a little pot bunker, if you will, right in the middle. So there's very little, you can't run the ball up that, you know, there's a very small margin, maybe, I don't know, 5 feet or 10 feet the most, where you can try and squeeze that ball up on the green. So if you don't have the right trajectory. So I remember, you know, when I was still trying to perfect my game, it was a tough green to hold.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so do you have a particular favorite hole there?
A favorite hole. 3 sets up well for me.
Yeah.
Like 3. There's water on the left. There's water behind. But I always play to draw.
Right,
so
right.
It's the perfect shot to aim 10 yards right and let it come in.
Yeah, and the wind usually comes off the right there. So
yeah.
So that makes it easier.
Yeah.
So then you end up going to Elon and you played there. And so how was that for you in terms of your development? What did you learn there other than getting a good education, but about yourself, about your golf game during those 4 years?
I only played for them for two full years. And I think at that time, as a junior, I got really burned out mm-hmm. with golf.
Right.
And I didn't know if I'd play professionally or not. And I wanted to explore a major that was a little bit more challenging.
Right.
And unfortunately, that meant a lot less practice time.
So, right.
It taught me a lot about time management, and it taught me a lot about taking breaks.
Right.
I used to think as a junior, if you took, you know, a day off golf, it was like the end of the world. Like, mm-hmm. I just never did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized how bad that was for, like, my psyche and just, you know, getting stronger as, you know, physically and as a person. And it taught me that on, you know, weeks where I feel like I've got 2 tournaments, if I want to take 3 days off, my swing's not going anywhere.
Right, exactly.
I can take 3 days off and relax and recuperate.
And I think that's just something that we have to learn in life in general is balance, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can't work all the time. You can't play all the time. You know, it's just, I think it's the one that we always say it all the time, right? The thing that we love about mm-hmm. golf is it's like a lot like life and dealing mm-hmm. with that and how to pick yourself up. But that's another thing, right? Balance, trying mm-hmm. to figure out what works for you. And in your case, you're now with some professional aspirations. You really need to fine tune that a little mm-hmm. bit because you know, you can really burn yourself out and overwork yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I struggle with moderation, so I'm learning
a little,
slowly.
Yeah. A little bit of an obsessive personality when it comes to golf.
You can't study 24 hours before a test. You might get an A, but you're not going to remember it a year from now. And
right,
you can't practice enough the day before an event to go out there and shoot a number. You have it or you don't.
Right, exactly. And so that was good. That was a good learning experience for you.
Absolutely. I'm grateful for those 4 years. I wish it could have gone differently, but you mm-hmm. can only wish so much about the past before you're blue in the face. So.
Exactly. What did you study? What did you, did you have any other aspirations other than golf when you were there?
I did. I started off in software engineering mm-hmm. and I ended up working temporarily for Credit Suisse,
mm-hmm.
a banking company. I worked in their software development mm-hmm. sector. And I immediately knew it wasn't for me. Something about desk jobs. I don't know. I guess I'm spoiled, but it didn't sit well with me. So I started in hardware repair at our school's computer store. And I loved that, but I couldn't see myself doing it forever. My mom always told me, if you find a job you like, you don't have to work
a day in your life. Sure.
And I said, I feel like this, I'm happy working here, but I don't feel like that's what she meant.
Right.
So right. I switched my major over to psychology because we didn't have neuroscience. So that was where my concentration kind of headed.
Mm-hmm.
And I published research with a professor and started looking into grad school possibilities. And really, immediately knew the exact field. And I said, this is it. This is what I'm meant to do. Dove into it head first for a while. So
your love of science, do you take a scientific approach to golf, or do you have a sort of, you know, do you take a more of a big picture approach to it?
Ironically, with golf, I'm logical in everything else but golf. It's all feel. I don't want to think about where my hands are, where my feet are. The pre-shot routine that Mike and I do have, my pro Mike, has me set up to just know that I'm lined up and set up properly. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to think. I'm not thinking about, oh, I want to land it in this spot or here. I just kind of feel it.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand that. And I think, you know, the thing about golf is that some people, just different methods apply to different players. I mean, there are people who, you know, Jack Nicklaus always said, you know, visualize it, you know. And I think that visualize the shot before you hit it. And I think some people, that appeals to them, seeing specifically spot that it's going to land and see it specifically roll and maybe how fast it's even going to roll. But if you're not that type of person, and even those people, like we're talking about balance, can take things a little too far and get a little too scientific or a little too, you know, obsessed with it. You know, the whole idea of track man and just living by those numbers and that kind of stuff. So people, you know, finding that balance and of what works for you as an instructor, you're talking about Mike Darrell, Mill Pond. What are some of the things other than just setup? Is setup like the premier thing that you guys work on?
Yeah, the beauty of working with Mike is that I don't want to know what's going on in my swing. I don't want to know where my hands are at the top or my hips are. I don't want to be thinking about anything other than, am I set up to the ball? Because your body already knows what to do.
Right.
After this many years and hours a day of practice. When something goes wrong, which it will because nobody's perfect, I'll go to him, and without telling me directly what it is, he'll fix it. So it's this really great symbiotic relationship. It's, you know, I like to have the ignorance is bliss mentality.
Sure,
and
sure.
Unfortunately, I can't get by on that all on my own.
Right.
So he's perfect for that.
What does he have a particular philosophy that he, you know, there's a lot of instruction out there that, and people have different sort of ideas. What is his, or what, do you know what his sort of foundation is in?
I do. He studied under Carl Loren.
Oh, so you one step to better golf.
Yeah, the one move to better golf. So between the two of them, they're fantastic.
Yeah, I did it as well. Mm-hmm. It's funny that you bring that up. So you're starting the swing with your left shoulder, and that those kinds of thoughts. And so that made sense, and I'm not surprised because once you said set up, I had a feel, you know, I didn't know, but that I in my own mind I was thinking, oh, that sounds exactly like the stuff that I've done. And for those folks who don't know Carl Loren and One Step to Better Golf or One Move to Better Golf, it's basically all based on setup. And once you set up, you basically then just start the swing with your left shoulder if you're a righty, if you're a left lefty, and then that's it. Just let the swing go, and everything just takes care of itself.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and he's a great teacher too, so it never goes too wrong. It's always, if it deviates from the norm, it's never by far.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a short break. More with Danielle Mullen. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
La Marmite Restaurant is a Long Island landmark. The tradition remains, but the menu, music, and vibe are all new. Golfers enjoy our wine selections from the vineyards of Ernie Els, Luke Donald, Jack Nicklaus, and Jim Nance, along with music on Friday and Saturday nights. Visit our website at lamarmiterestaurant.com for more details. Choose La Marmite for your next night out. We'll make it a special one.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by Danielle Mullen, one of the Long Island's top amateurs and future LPGA or aspiring LPGA player. Danielle, before we get to that, just talk a little bit about your summer. You had the unique opportunity, you qualified for the four ball at Bandon Dunes. Just talk about that experience.
That was amazing. I don't know if you know or anybody knows, I had some shoulder issues back mm-hmm. last fall.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent the winter not competing at all or in anything other than physical therapy, pretty much.
And I'm sure that wasn't frustrating.
Not at all. And about February, one of my good friends, her name's Ellen Oswald, we grew up playing. She's in Westchester. We were both in Florida this winter, and she texted me and said, there's this event called the Four Ball. You know, do you want to try to qualify? I'm thinking, you know, we're in Florida with nothing to do except practice all day. My shoulder feels great. I got the okay from my doctor, so let's do it. So we qualified in Orlando. And then in May, we flew out to Oregon, and that golf course is just breathtaking. I'm looking forward to watching the men play in Chambers Bay because just from what I can see, it's so similar.
Yep. That'll be, that's an interesting golf course in its mm-hmm. own right. It was a heartbreaking, you guys didn't make the cut, but I mean, it was a very challenging experience to say the least. But what positives did you take from that experience?
Well, the one thing I learned is my ball flight started going higher due to positive swing changes
right.
in the past year, which mm-hmm. is fantastic. But when you approach a golf course with 30-mile-an-hour winds,
right.
suddenly I'm regretting the switch in trajectory.
Right.
So it taught me a number of different things about how to play in the wind. You know, playing at golf courses out east is one thing, but playing at Bandon's
a whole nother animal.
Something completely different. So it taught me that I might have 120 yards in and need a full 6-iron, which
right.
normally goes about 155, 160. So, you know, it's hard to stand over it and hit a full swing.
But when you watch players in person, like if you're watching the girls at the, you know, at Westchester Country Club this weekend, isn't that one of the things that even, and not just them, but the men as well, controlling your ball flight? I mean, isn't that in general just such a, because it doesn't have to be windy for you to want to knock it down. You might want to put spin on it, you might take spin off, whatever it is that you might want to do. I would say that one of the major things other than short game for professionals is controlling your trajectory.
Absolutely. There are times where maybe a high fade over a tree is needed.
And sure.
For someone like me who hit a low ball flight
that's a
for
problem.
3 years, you know, suddenly like you have to get a little creative. And
mm-hmm.
the one thing I've learned though is if there are physical ailments or golf swings that just won't enable you to control ball flight.
Sure.
I've been a victim of that.
Right.
And I know there's more than one way to make a par. So if you're not the person who can fade it up over a tree to cut the corner, like, just hit it in the middle.
Yeah.
You're still going to have a shot at it anyway. So, you know, sometimes I try to really analyze a risk-reward situation in terms of ball flight. But when it comes to in the middle of a fairway with wind in your face, it's great to have the ability to hit it low and still stop it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you make a good point. I think that sometimes you just have to accept what it is that your body, you know, allows you to do. And a lot of people don't do that, you know, particularly high handicappers and stuff like that. It's just things you can't do. And so, you know, that's why I love watching some of these golfers on the men and women's side, like a Zach Johnson, who doesn't, you know, who lays up every hole, every par five and wins the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a girl like the girl, I'm blanking out on her last name, Mo.
Martin,
who won the British Open.
Yeah.
I mean, that girl is, you know, she's maybe 5'3", that woman.
Hits and, it about 220.
And hits it about 220, exactly. And so when you see, you know, people like that accept what they are, they accept their abilities, and they're a lot, and do what they just stay within themselves, as you know, one of the famous cliches in golf. And so there's a lot to learn there.
Absolutely. I feel like for a few years, especially with the injury, I would be, and I feel like a lot of people do this, they chase after what they think is the perfect swing.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go from instructor to instructor, take two lessons and switch.
Right.
And the beauty of golf is, yeah, I've been with Mike for almost 9 years now working together, and I don't question anything else, you know.
Sure.
It's nice to have an open mind, but at the same time, you know, you can only take so many methods that are so different before you just get like a tangled piece of string and wonder why the ball's not going anywhere. It's nice to find a method and stick to it and stay within your limits.
Absolutely. When let's talk about the LPGA Q school. When did you decide you wanted to do that? What are you doing to prepare? Other than practice.
The idea first crossed my mind in June last year. I thought about it. And my shoulder wasn't acting up yet. And then once it started acting up, I said, you know, let me think about this and not tell anyone just in case. But the shoulder's at 100%. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about it a lot, and it's right around the corner. It's a month and a half away.
Right.
So I made the decision personally for myself at 100% about a month ago.
And who's going to go out there with you?
I do have a caddy who will be coming out there with me. He's fantastic. And I'm hoping my parents come.
Good.
I'm sure they will. But that'll be a positive. And then I think it's so far away, so I don't know who else would really want to travel. But it should be a really great experience.
What do you think is a little more scary? The idea of doing Q school and you know, taking that step, or actually qualifying and making it onto the tour on whatever level, their web.com, excuse me.
The Symmetra Tour,
exactly. So what do you think is more scary?
Well, I used to think of tournaments in terms of grandiosity. You know, I never qualified for USGA events growing up because I feel like I put so much pressure on myself as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is a big event. You got to pull out a low number. And that's the worst thing to do.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I was telling a friend a couple weeks ago, I said, you know, I'm kind of nervous. And he actually qualified for the Canadian tour recently. And he just looked at me like with a blank look on his face. He said, it's just another tournament. And it, just the simplicity of that statement kind of knocked me off my feet. I go, wow.
Right.
That's, you know, it's a good reality check. It's totally right. Like, if you approach every single shot as this is the only shot,
mm-hmm.
let me just get it as close as I can. Or if you can't get it close, obviously don't go through a tree line. You know, what's the best chance I have at getting the next shot as close as I can?
Sure.
Then it takes a lot of the stress off, because I can sit here and bite my nails until I don't have any anymore.
Right, exactly.
And worry about it all I want. But at the end of the day, I've done the work. I have the swing. I feel like if I shoot a good round, I shoot a good round. If not, we have next year.
Good. So. Well, that's a healthy, definitely a healthy attitude. I guess I was just really just thinking about there's still a lot to plan for. I mean, going out on tour, you know, money, expenses, travel. There's a lot to plan for, mm-hmm. at the possibility, and that can be and knowing that you're out there to make a living, that you know you're mm-hmm. you're paying for or playing for food on the table, so to speak. You know, I think that takes a lot of courage to do, and so I think that's a wonderful part of your personality that you're determined to try and take that on.
It is scary, for sure. Fortunately, I caddy every other day just to make sure I've got a buffer in case anything ever goes wrong.
Right.
To make sure I can still afford, you know, the basics for mm-hmm. golf. It is an expensive lifestyle.
Sure.
But hopefully there is the beauty of, you know, once you make it, having other people who, you know, can maybe help you out along the way, like parents or sponsors. You know, these girls aren't doing it all by themselves. So.
Yep. Have you watched any of the Westchester, the first major or this new PGA major?
My friend Ellen, who we played in the four ball, she's a member at Westchester. So
oh, okay.
I'm going to be meeting her up there tomorrow.
Sweet.
My parents have been up there. Mike has been up there. And actually, Se-young Kim's caddy is a really good friend of mine.
Oh, get out of here.
I'm looking forward to going up there and seeing them. And there's also Marina, Alex, and Kelly Sean. I grew up playing junior golf with them, so I'm happy to see them doing well and see how
she's about. I think Kelly's what, 5 shots back, I think, as of this morning. It's awesome.
Fantastic. And Se-young Kim's leading it as of, I haven't checked the morning, but as of yesterday. So I'm really happy to see all them doing so well.
That's excellent. All right, we're going to take one last break, and we'll be back to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
It's here at last. Golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, regripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My guest is top amateur from Long Island, Danielle Mullen. Danielle, we only have a couple minutes to wrap things up. Favorite course on Long Island that you like to play?
I mean, I'm going to have to be biased and say Southward Ho. I know it's not the most prestigious and the most challenging course when you're sitting on
I think when the wind's blowing there, it can be very challenging.
It is.
Because the wind there, because the way the course is laid out, it's never a, it's not a direct in.
No.
It's always like a crosswind.
With Bethpage Black and National and Shinnecock as your neighbors, it's kind of hard to say that. But, I mean, I grew up in that course. So it's funny to me how it's a different course every time. It's just challenging.
Yep.
But, of course, I mean, I caddy at National. It's phenomenal. I had a brief work experience at Deepdale, also another phenomenal course.
Yep.
You know, we're blessed to be surrounded by as many courses as we have.
It's an embarrassment of riches, if you will.
Yes.
All right, so you have a chance to play. You're playing at National, and you could bring three other guests. Who are you bringing? Let's do it this way. You have to bring three players from one day from the PGA Tour, three players from the LPGA. Who are you bringing?
Three from the PGA?
First, yes.
Dead or alive?
Either one.
Okay, that changes a lot.
It sure does.
By far, Ben Hogan would be my number one. I've read like every biography on him. He is just phenomenal.
Sure.
Believe it or not, I really admire Dustin Johnson. I know he's had
some
personal stuff going on, but his swing is...
Well, you don't have to hang out with him. You're just playing golf.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
that's fine.
Exactly.
You're not going to be friends. You're not, you know.
So it'd probably be him. And then for a third... I never thought about a third. It would have to just be a classic, though, like Bobby Jones or Walter
Hagen.
You know, I feel like, when am I going to have the opportunity to ever play with somebody like that? It's just such a different game back then.
Yeah. That's a tough one because you have the sort of the classic Bobby Jones and then you have the fun party guy, Walter Hagen. That's a tough choice there between those two.
Absolutely. Ben Hogan makes it.
Yeah.
Top of the list.
Absolutely. All right. Female players.
Female players. Let's see. I mean, once again, like the classic, just for the sake of the question, like Babe Zaharias.
No, that's awesome.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Let's see who else. I mean, Annika in her prime. That would be great because she made so many great scores. It was hard to believe.
Yeah.
And then
Miss 59.
Yeah. And believe it or not, there's this one girl on tour right now who I admire her style and the way she dresses just as an individual. J. Marie Green.
Uh-huh.
I think
she does have a very, you know, individual, very, you know, Christina Kim kind of personality.
Yeah.
Willing to do whatever it is that they want to do. They march to the beat of their own drum, if you will.
Yeah, I met her once, but she seems like just a really neat individual. So that would be, hopefully, you know, if the future serves me well, I'll have the chance to see her. So
absolutely. Well, Danielle, thank you very much for coming in. This has been a blast. I really appreciate you, you know, letting us take a little peek behind the curtains of what you're thinking about and, you know, how you plan to go on. And best of luck to your... in your endeavors. I'm sure you're going to be successful whatever you do, but we wish you luck at Q School.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, that's On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you, folks. Please join us next week and hopefully get out and play. It's beautiful out there, folks. Take care.